So we're here today with Carolyn Deedy, who is a fellow for global challenges here at the Pell Center. And she has a new report, Incarceration and Recidivism Lessons from Abroad. Carolyn, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Jim. I'm happy to be here to talk about the study.
So tell us a little bit about it. What is the study? What's the thought behind it?
Well, as part of the project for global challenges here at the Pell Center, I will be looking at issues that we face in America that are similar, same issues that other countries face, and looking at those other countries and see how they deal with whatever the issue is, in this case incarceration, and determining if there's anything we can learn from them.
And in the case of incarceration, what did you learn?
I learned a lot, Jim. I will be honest, when I set out on this particular project and began to do research, I suspected that the United States did have a high incarceration rate. I had no idea that it was so high, that we, the United States, incarcerates more people than any other country in the world, and the separation between our prison population rate and other Western industrialized English-speaking countries is significant. To me, the numbers were staggering. One out of every 100 Americans is in jail. One out of every 40 children in our country has a parent in jail. In prison, I should say.
Those numbers are staggering. What accounts for that dramatic increase in the United States?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because what seems contradictory is the fact that the crime rate has actually gone down. The incarceration rate has gone up 500% since the 1970s. There are a number of factors we can look to for the reason behind this increase, this drastic increase. And one of them is something that was proposed in the 1970s. It was the war on drugs. And this actually began under Nixon. Most people don't realize that, but it goes that far back. And there are a number of other factors as well, that there are harsher mandatory sentences, harsher drug sentences. The politicized criminal justice system, we, unlike a lot of other countries, elect our judges. And that can be problematic in the sense that they accept campaign funds from special interest groups. It could pose problems. That's one possibility.
And that's different from the way the rest of the world selects judges.
Yes, yes, absolutely, for the most part. I didn't research every country, but for the most part, yes. Now, if judges are appointed, there's problems with that as well. But if they are nominated, if it's as a fair an assessment and appointment as possible, then that would be a better way to go, in my opinion, than going through the election process.
So how do other countries deal with incarceration and recidivism? And recidivism is the likelihood of repeat offending or actual repeat offending?
Well, that's a really good question, Jim. I'm glad you asked it, because in the United States, we consider recidivism to be reoffending and ultimately being incarcerated again. But other countries call it different things. They'll call it reoffending. They'll call it rearrest. They keep their statistics under a number of different names, not just recidivism. But so to look at other countries, for instance, to go back to the high incarceration rate in America versus other countries, the next closely ranked in terms of the prison population rate, the next closely ranked English-speaking industrialized country is the UK, and they keep their statistics separate from Scotland. Scotland has their own, and then England and Wales has their own. But the United States is number one in terms of the high prison population rate, and the UK comes in at 102 out of 221 countries. And then you look at other countries, particularly the Scandinavian countries, other G20 countries, there's a big difference.
And the difference extends to the purpose of incarceration. This is one of the things that really leapt out at me in your study, was the contrast between an American approach, which really seems about punishment, and a lot of other countries who have a slightly different approach. Tell us about that.
Yes, absolutely. So to look at these countries, particularly Scandinavian countries and some in Western European countries, the ones who have the low prison population rates, and have some have very low recidivism rates as well. Norway is an example. The approach is different. So Scandinavian countries, Germany, the Netherlands, are very much interested in reform and rehabilitation over punishment. And I did look more closely at Norway, and there it's an approach called the normalization approach. And the idea behind that is that when prisoners are incarcerated, they should come out ready to be better citizens. The idea is that they would be incarcerated, they would realize that, yes, that what they did was wrong. They should want to be a better person when they come out. And the country, the government, provides the tools that could help them make these released prisoners better citizens. And so the approach is much more humane. It really is much, it focuses on the best approach for society. What will be the betterment of society?
And so, you know, I think critics in this country might argue that jail's not supposed to be easy. And some of the prisons, particularly in some of the Nordic countries, might fall prey to the country club criticism that you sometimes hear about prisons already in this country. So is there any prospect of reform in the United States to tackle this issue? It seems to me your data certainly indicates that other countries might have a better approach. If you look at the recidivism rate as an indication of whether or not their criminal justice system actually produces more than punishment but better citizens, as you put it. So is there any likelihood for reform in the United States?
I think so, but if you'll allow me, I just want to talk about recidivism just for another moment.
Yeah.
There is the recidivism rate overall in the United States is 50%. 50% of released prisoners will reoffend and be reincarcerated within 3 years of their release. Now, what's interesting is there are other countries that do have similar recidivism rates. And in fact, Ireland, and this was a fairly recent report, reported a 62% recidivism rate, which is, that's quite high. Now, again, not only are there differences with how one refers to recidivism, but there's also different ways to measure recidivism. So this could have been from a 10-year study versus a 1-year or a 3-year. But the point I want to make is that recidivism definitely contributes to the high incarceration rate in the United States, whereas data has shown that it doesn't make a significant impact in other countries who have similar recidivism rates to the United States. So something is different. Something is impacting their prison population rates differently than ours, or not affecting their incarceration rates the same. And so I do think what it comes down to is certainly the approach. It is. And so I do think as well that there is hope for reform, certainly, in this country. Absolutely. And in fact, just last week, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, made an announcement that President Obama had asked for a significant sum of money in the fiscal year 2015 budget. He requested, $27.4 billion for the Department of Justice as a whole. So that covers a number of programs, but specifically, $173 million is dedicated, or would be, to criminal justice reform.
Huh.
Now, I found that very encouraging, but I will note, and I'm going to quote Attorney General Eric Holder, he makes a great point. He says, each dollar spent on prevention and reentry has the potential to save several dollars in incarceration costs. These wise investments can help make our criminal justice system more effective and more efficient. So the hope is that if investing in treatment and reintegration programs for prisoners when they're released will, one, reduce the prison population rate, the high rate of incarceration, And two, it will save money because it should be far less expensive. It's an initial investment up front, but it should be far less expensive to treat and help reintegrate a prisoner versus keeping them in prison for 10 or 20 years, particularly, in my opinion, for drug offenders and other nonviolent criminals, which we haven't talked about, but they make up a significant portion of our prison population.
And there was important movement on that last summer when the Attorney General announced a liberalization, if you will, of sentencing guidelines from the Department of Justice.
Yes, yeah, and I think liberalization is an apt word. The program is actually called Smart on Crime, and it was last August that Attorney General Holder announced it, and that was a big step. What he was doing was encouraging judges at the state level, municipalities, to not be as harsh with drug sentencing. Now, of course, this shouldn't apply to violent offenders who may or may not be involved with drugs or cartels or anything like that. But for some of these low-level offenders, it makes perfect sense. Because right now, there are a number of mandatory sentences on the books. So what has happened in the past is judges don't have a choice. Their hands are tied. So if someone who's been arrested may come before the judge, and the judge feels like the punishment doesn't fit the crime and says, sorry.
But they don't have any latitude.
No latitude. Their hands are tied. And which is frustrating for them.
Yeah. So you mentioned that this is the first in a series of studies. What's next?
Well, the next one is looking at higher education. And boy, it's a tremendous topic. I think we all know that higher education in the United States can be very, very expensive. And paying for it, the stress that it gives parents, the stress that it gives students, the financial stress, how do they get their money? How will they pay it back? And these days I'm seeing more and more articles about what's the value of the education. More high school juniors and seniors are looking at colleges where they want to see what kind of jobs the graduates are getting from any particular school before they will invest the money to go there. They want to see that it's sort of a guarantee that they will be employed. So I think people are looking at it in the United States more really as an investment, and they want to be really careful about it. What I will do is show other countries' approach to higher education. There are many other countries where it is subsidized by the government, and that makes a huge difference.
Well, it's a fascinating topic and a great series on global challenges here at the Pell Center. The study is Incarceration and Recidivism, Lessons from Abroad. It's available at www.salve.edu/Pell Center. Carolyn Deedy, thank you for being with us today. I'm Jim Lutis from the Pell Center.